Violent femmes going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was reminded, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I'm Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. The Matthew Aaron Show is also on Facebook, and you can find us on Stitcher at the Stitcher app, which is on the phones. You can listen to us. You can listen to all your favorite shows. And what I was reminded of with the Violent Femmes was, I believe it's the 30th anniversary of that album that's coming up.
Really?
In a few weeks. Oh, Blister in the Sun, yeah. Added up. That's making me feel old.
Yeah.
Would it be 30th?
Yeah.
That would be, wouldn't it?
That would be 30th.
Oh,
you know what's
wow.
You know what's crazy?
Go ahead, Lika Prius.
Lika Prius, hello. I drove by the Warner Studios, and they have a big poster up for the...
For the Violent Femmes?
No. They have a big poster up for the anniversary Blu-ray and DVD re-release of Cabaret.
Oh, wow.
And
really?
I'm like, well, that... And I'm like, man, I
feel... Is it coming out on Blu-ray? Blu-ray something?
Too, yeah, and I feel so old, and then, which is weird because I wasn't alive when that movie came out.
Right.
I was 72.
Right, I was just going to say, Violent Femmes, I feel so old, but
yeah.
It was a year before I was even born.
72, you know, The Godfather.
Right.
Yeah.
That 82, that's back when Denny's had decent food.
Yeah, right.
Like when Denny's was a good option.
Before they got sued for not serving black people.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Denny's. Denny's.
What are you doing?
We said it. You did it, Denny's.
So I did want to bring up the big news, and then I wanted to – oh, first, I want to pimp Jeff Boucher's new article on EW.com. He talks to J.J. Abrams. He talks about From Star Trek to Star Wars, I believe is the name of the column. It's really, really excellent. It's a really good read. Jeff Boucher, for people that don't listen to the show or don't know, I will go out and say – he is a pal, but at the same time, I'm not biased. He's one of the best. And he's a pal because he's the best. Like,
he's not the best because he's a pal.
No, I'm gonna explain something here. I've made friends with Jeff, not just because I heard he's a great guy and he's friends with certain people we know as well, but I'm such a big fan of his work. I sought him out.
Okay.
So I did not seek him. He didn't seek me out, and we're all pally, and I'm like, oh, go read his shit. Jeff's the best, and he's a great interviewer. And, you know, it's not – he does it in a journalistic style. He's a journalist still. There's very few of them. And
right.
Unfortunately, this one's in Hollywood, and he's a journalist for Hollywood, which it's a waste of Jeff's talents.
Well – there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, there is. There is. And yeah. It's for the lesser minds. Jeff's IQ is just too big for Hollywood. He needs to take that to like.
Yeah.
He needs to go overseas to Darfur and
yeah.
He needs to do some journalism there.
Get cracking on the
Yeah, but he's great. I love Jeff. And our guest today is Corey Stoll, who everybody we'll know soon enough from House of Cards. If you already don't, Ernest Hemingway, he played in Midnight in Paris. He was in The Bourne Legacy last year. He was in Law and Order L.A. with he was Fred Molina's partner.
Oh.
Our good pal Fred.
Fred.
And we talk about Fred in the interview.
A new Corey.
Yeah, a new Corey.
Yeah.
A sexier Corey, if you ask me. A bald man, and he wears it well. I don't think I'm going to wear it that well. We were talking last night in the editing room about whether I'm going to pivot it up or not, get the hair replacement surgery, do the Steve Carell, do the Joel McHale.
You'll need more than that to catch up to pivot. You'll need more work than that.
Will I?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I've been so anti it. But then I saw it yesterday, and it cost like only a couple grand.
What
you have
happened?
A headache for like 2 weeks, though.
Yeah.
You have like a headache for 2 weeks. The scars go away.
Different?
It heals and everything. They give you a Vike, so it can't be that bad.
So you're going to do it for the Vike, basically.
Well, no. I'm just saying it can't be that bad.
Well, it's not you. You know?
So well, what,
let it happen
well, it
naturally.
Is me. It's your hair they replace it with, I guess.
Uh-huh.
They like cut... like out of your scalp, like in the back of it, out of your scalp in the back. And then they like insert it. They shave your head completely and it like grows naturally back in.
Uh-huh.
I think what happens is you have to go once every couple of years, you have to go in and do it. And because you'll just go bald again.
Right.
Is really what happens. You won't go bald, though, for a while. Like, it's years off. You'll get it. You'll replace it. But the celebrities that do have it, and I've already mentioned names, but I shouldn't. The celebrities that do have it, I'm assuming they go in every couple years. And when there's
guys
no
only?
Paparazzi on them for 2 weeks. Well, women got the weaves,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, it's like the male version of the weave.
Yeah, except
it?
This, no, because this
it's
requires surgery, and they
weave.
Go in your head.
Okay.
You know, but then I look at, like, Travolta, who has the toupee, and I look at who else has the toupee. I don't know if Carell has plugs, a toupee, or hair replacement.
I think he would be sharp enough to avoid.
I think he's with Ted Danson on the, yeah, I think he may be with Ted Danson on the Bird's Nest.
No.
I think he may be.
Okay.
I think he may. I'm not positive, but I think so. But, like, I'm wondering, like, maybe you go with the rug? Because Danson always looks great with the rug. Here's my only problem with the rug. In the morning, because you have a great head of hair. You're not going bald. You're good.
Yeah.
You got hair.
Well, I'm going to go. You say what you're going to say, and then I'll.
Well, I was just going to say the problem is you go in the bathroom every morning. You don't obviously shower with your $1,000 toupe. And, you know, you got to take it off.
Yeah.
I mean, every morning you're reminded that you're bald. It's really like stuffing your bra.
Yeah.
A toupee.
Okay.
Because every morning you know you got small tits. But you're putting socks down there, and you have to look at them.
Plus, people can tell now. People are really
with the
good
toupees.
At that. Yeah, it's like gaydar. You know how everybody's gaydar is like pretty good.
Yeah,
it's same thing with that.
Notice how Ted Danson went from that's pretty good. Notice how Ted Danson went from brown hair to gray, like there was no in between.
Yeah,
that's because he was going gray, probably dyed it all the time, and then he said, "All right, fuck the dye." But there is no brown gray toupee. There's no mixed. Toupee.
I like the gray. It looks good.
I know, but I love that he ran out and got a gray toupee to match the gray hair or the white hair.
But he
is
but
it
he,
white or gray, Ted? It's white.
It's silver.
Yeah, it's like silver.
Leslie
yeah.
Nielsen.
Yeah, right.
Part. Okay, but it,
why
I
even
like
get
that,
the toupee
like
at
that, though,
point,
but,
though? If you're Ted, if you've already gone white,
it's not about the color. It's about hair or no hair. He didn't want to.
But
have
he has hair everywhere else. It's just in the back.
Yeah, but
he has me. I have the Ted Danson going
but
on.
But you're not going to rock a two-toned head.
No,
like,
that's true.
Like,
but why even rock it at all at that point? You already got white or silver hair. You're married to Mary fucking Steenburgen. No woman wants. No 19-year-olds watching TV going, I want to fuck that 60-year-old man with the head full of hair.
Yeah.
You might as well just get rid of it.
Men want to fuck her.
Yeah, right.
Us.
That's what it is.
but no one, yeah. But you're not going to have a brown, you know, a brown-haired guy with like a ashy salt and pepper
right,
sideburns
no.
back.
No, I understand that. I don't understand why I even do the toupee at this point. You already look older and more experienced, and it's just a bald spot.
Yeah,
whatever. What happened to the Gene fucking Hackmans of the world with the comb over that was like four long strands of hair, and it just went.
Remember when Nicholson combed it over for about
Nicholson too?
Yeah,
Nicholson doesn't fucking wear it too.
No,
he doesn't fake it.
And I the ladies seem to like him.
Yeah. Like when you saw Nicholson, what was it, months ago? Did he have any fake hair?
He was wearing a hat.
But he wasn't rocking the fake hair from
no,
what you
it wasn't,
could tell.
No.
I don't think Nicholson would. Travolta, why do you rock the fake hair? Everyone knows it's fake. It's like everybody knows, bro. It's got to be for them, right?
But
it's got to be because they look at themselves in the mirror
people
and they're
who
like,
know
whoa.
You know that you've been around from the 70s. They know you're not young. So
right.
If you try to look young, it doesn't. You could have the best work done in the world, the best therapy.
Yeah.
It's just you were in Saturday Night Fever, and that was 40 fucking years ago.
Right.
And
it's like when Travolta gets the really bad stuff, like he paints his head or whatever, it's that spray paint. And it's like, dude, you're fine bald.
Yeah.
You know what? And by the way, if you rock bald like Corey Stoll
but
does.
You just said you were going to do this
replacement. No, I was thinking
thing.
About it. I'm like, should I do it? I just
say,
think it's an interesting conversation.
I'm going to let the process just happen. I'm not going to do anything.
I think
that's
I'm
very
with.
Un-Hollywood,
I think I'm with you on that.
Okay.
Because I think it's kind of horseshit. And by the way, if I go home, right, Downers Grove, Chicago, everybody knows me. And everybody knows me pre-Almost Famous, okay?
Right.
So when I go home, they're going to be like, a little work done.
Yeah.
And is that a toupee? Is it hair replacement?
Not only are they going to know something's up, they're going to recognize instantly what it is, and you're never going to stop getting shit about it.
No, never.
Nor
should
you.
Never stop getting shit about it. And the women that are fucking me are going to be like, yeah, he does have that, yeah.
Well, we're not going to do theoretical arguments, but yeah, that technically
yeah,
would
it happen. It happens. Because you know women are going to get their balls busted for fucking me.
Yeah.
By either guys or girls going, you got a little raccoon's nest up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, man. I think it's like, listen, I mean, I know if Piven's people or Steve Carell's people or whoever, or Travolta even, if they listen to this show, they'd be cursing me out right now.
Yeah.
But, dude, everybody knows.
People know.
Everybody knows. I don't even think just people know. Everybody knows.
And by the way, we like you.
We love you.
We're not saying this because we don't like you.
No,
we're
trying
to hurt you.
I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get the process.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's interesting to me, though, is Corey Stoll. Bald, man. And he was going bald like 10 years ago. Just fucking wears it,
does
man.
Does he have like a growth, like a two-day stubble on his head? Or is it like shiny bald?
It depends on the role.
Uh-huh.
He'll either go shiny bald like Bruce Willis used to, or like Bruce Willis now where he lets the stubble grow in.
Yeah.
I would do both, too. It would just depend on how I feel. But
depend on the role.
Right. But Corey rocks it. And him and I talk about him being bald, which he thought was funny.
Yeah.
Because I go, I'm bald and bro, so let's talk about this. But
you got some years left, though.
I do. I have some years. But he rocks it. Like, I will say this about a man. He is sexy with the bald. He's got it going on. Okay. I don't think any woman goes, ew, he's bald. None.
Right.
Zero.
Okay.
Zilch. The guy he does the show with, Spacey. I don't know if he's had hair done or not. I don't know what the deal is with that. I remember him being a lot more thin.
He had hair, yeah.
And it's like, Kevin, you're sexy, bro. You don't need the fake hair.
Yeah.
I'm just saying Kevin may not have fake hair, but
we don't know.
We know about Piven. I know Piven.
Right.
Come on. Everyone that saw that Seinfeld episode. And here's the thing, too. I'm not outing anybody. It's in TV history, people.
Right.
Anyone that saw the Seinfeld episode where he is auditioning to play George Costanza and saw that Piven had no hair.
Right.
It's a little obvious now, bro.
A little bit, yeah.
It's a little obvious. I just don't get it. Is it for confidence? Because I think, yeah, some of it is they convince themselves that Hollywood cares. And maybe there's a percentage of Hollywood that cares about the youth of men. But, like, I think it's more about them.
It's about their confidence.
I think it's insecurity,
but
right?
But that's very...
Because I'm insecure.
Yeah, I'm insecure. That's very understandable.
That's why I'm having this conversation. From, yeah. I'm having this conversation because I'm insecure.
And I was really hesitant to take my shirt off at the
beach.
Well,
that's different.
I have tons
that's
of back hair.
That's different, though.
It's like really
that's
unsightly.
Your choice. You can go wax that back hair.
Uh-huh.
You can go wax it. You can go shave it. You go bald, you go bald. There ain't no fighting that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a choice at that point.
What about your ears? Do you have hair in your ears?
No, I don't have any of that.
I got that, too, and that's disgusting to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's
hair
the worst.
Hair in the ears?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to be that old man.
I'm
going to
be that
ears,
guy. I know.
Hair.
I'm a Jewish neurosurgeon.
I'm just insecure because I'm sitting in that editing room last night looking at my bald spots on this pilot, and I'm like, cut it, cut it, cut it. And they're like, really?
No.
And I go, yeah,
it's
cut
content.
It. I know, but I'm like, cut it, I'm bald, cut it, I'm bald, cut it, I'm bald. And it's like, why am I so insecure? Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Just go out. Because listen, if you come off confident about yourself, people dig that enough.
Absolutely.
I went on a date yesterday,
which
I probably won't see her again for like 5 months because I have no life. But I went on a date yesterday.
Feet.
Right. I went on a date for lunch, and... Not only was she awesome, awesome, okay, totally amazing broad, but, like, I didn't feel insecure about my hair or about being, like, 15 pounds overweight or any of that because I was so confident around her because I could tell she was cool. The fact that she was cool lightened me up, and I was so confident, not egotistical, not cocky, but confident,
right,
that, like, it went great. I just rocked it. Yeah,
yeah,
I was at my Nicholson best yesterday at lunch.
Okay.
It was really disappointing that I'm going to have no life past yesterday.
Yeah.
I even told her, I go, listen, I only went out with you because I don't have a life. and I wanted to remember what having a life was like.
Yeah.
So this was like my moment in the sun. Maybe after this pilot sells, whatever, if you're still single, I'll see you soon. I literally said this to her. She goes, really?
Smooth.
I go, I don't think it's the right time right
Smooth.
Now. Yeah. No, she was cool about it. And she's like, and then she's hitting me up all day texting. She's like, when the moment's right, whenever you want to go out again, I really had a good time, blah, blah, blah. I go, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go out again anytime soon. I just don't like it.
Yeah. But you liked it in that.
I loved it. It was
great
in the moment.
So what,
it was great.
So immediately after it was over, you were just like, oh, this is great. This is what it feels like to be a real dude. And then it was over. And you're like, I don't ever want to fucking do
right.
that.
I dropped her off at the train.
Really?
Yeah, I dropped her off at the train in North Hollywood at the L, mm-hmm. the R version of the L, the subway.
Yeah.
And in Los Angeles, the one subway. And I'm just like, I just turn to her and I go, maybe like 5 months from now this could work or something. I don't know. We have a shot.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I go, I'm not saying hold out for me or anything, but you
and
know,
by
I'm...
no means listen to the next show.
Oh, that's well. See, here's the thing: she's not in Hollywood.
Okay.
She has no cares in the world about Hollywood.
Okay.
Could give a shit.
Okay.
Can't. Has no friends in the business.
All right. Neither do we.
She met an actor once on a plane.
Okay.
That was her brush with Hollywood.
Okay.
And then she said she hit on the guy and found out he was gay. Shocker. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Okay.
Not saying all actors are gay.
Well.
Just a decent amount.
So you made sure to mention to her, listen, I have tremendous mood swings.
Yeah,
apparently.
Right. Oh, I told her, I go, you know, I'm on steroids. I take like 15 vitamins a day. I don't get any sleep. I'm just a miserable human being.
I smoke before my smoke break.
Right. I was already on – I drank 60 ounces of coffee in front of her.
Oh, man.
And I was just going like full speed ahead.
You must have come off like a crazy person.
She was so wowed over by me.
Wow.
Here's why, though.
I'm glad for it. I really am.
You know who the broads are that are cool? I finally put two and two together on this. And tell me if your experience is the same. Women – who are really, their close friends are gay dudes. Those are the cool broads. She was on her way. I had to drop her off at the train station because she was going to West Hollywood to go to the bars with her gay buddies. And I've noticed something. Every woman I met that's really tight with a lot of gay dudes is really cool and understanding. Because gay dudes have no filter.
No.
No filter. And if they can put up with them, they can put up with my schlubby ass.
You run the risk of them not feeling comfortable around dudes, though.
That's true. You think that's true?
Of that being like a safety, like a Linus blanket. Just not that those guys,
really?
Not that she thinks those guys are going to ever like try to have sex with her.
Sure, sure.
She just likes, some women just like male company, but they don't want to hook up with a guy.
That's
it's
interesting.
Kind of strange.
That's really interesting.
Maybe it's just the crazy women that I know. But
no, I don't think you're crazy about it,
but,
though.
Yes, but women who do, yes. Many of them are sensible because they know what fun is, that you can have fun and you can have fun with men.
That's crazy.
Do we sound like
No, we're just trying to figure it all
like
out.
A couple of Clydes?
Listen, anyone that listened to this show,
I got
a lot of hate on Facebook and Twitter over my hatred for the Oscars. Listen, people, I'm going to say this one time. And then last week we had the Lucy thing. I'm going to say this one time. One, I know I'm like a talk show host now. I'm still a fucking comedian.
Right.
If you get offended by anything I say, don't forget I'm a fucking comedian first.
Fuck you.
First, always, and forever,
yes.
A comedian.
Yes.
Period. Second of all, don't take me seriously. Third of all, though, I know none of the answers. I don't have the Oscars figured out. I don't have hair replacement figured out. I'm not bashing Piven and Travolta.
Certainly don't have women figured out.
Right. And that was my next point. I don't have women figured out. I don't have gays figured out. I don't have anybody figured out. So I'm just asking questions. I'm putting the conversation, and Lee's putting the conversation out there in the world.
We're talking.
So you guys can now talk to your friends and go, you know, I was listening to the Matthew Aaron Show, and Matt and Lee were talking about blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of interesting. Or what a douchey thing to say. And then maybe your friend's like, I don't know. That's not crazy.
Right.
Or, yeah, they're douchebags.
Yeah.
Whatever. But talk about it. Open up the conversation.
Right.
Talk to people and be like, hey, have you noticed that women that have a lot of gay friends are usually cooler? That's a conversation. Or talk about why do famous men or men who are going to be famous or want to be famous or whatever the deal is, get hair replacement surgery, get toupees. Should they do it? Should we be sending a message that's sexier not to do it? Like Corey Stoll sends a message that's sexier not to do it. House of Cards. By the way, I wanted to say again about House of Cards, Kevin Spacey, Dana Brunetti. One of the best shows I've seen on TV. It's the best show since Breaking Bad. It's the best pilot since probably Sopranos. I mean, it's just fantastic, top to bottom. It's a great show. I saw all 13 episodes. And Corey and I have a very long talk about that. I'm going to play that interview now.
Right.
Because Lee and I actually did way more talking than I thought we were going to do.
Yeah, we botched this experiment.
We did a half hour here.
A short show. Yeah.
Well, we can still do a short show. We'll come back and Lee and I will talk about the interview and we'll wrap things up.
Yeah.
But just putting it out there one last time, because now everyone's waiting to listen for Corey Stoll. I'm not ripping on anybody.
No.
Calm down.
No.
But if we cannot honestly admit that a guy like Jeremy Piven has hair replacement surgery and can't talk about it like adults, then it's fucking stupid.
It's stupid.
It's fucking stupid.
And we're a couple of wise asses.
Yeah, that's
if
true,
if you're
too.
Listening to what we say too closely, that's weird.
And by the way, I'm saying out loud, I'm thinking about doing what Jeremy does.
Right.
So I'm not even ripping on the bro.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's an interesting choice. And why? And, why do we do it?
And personally, we are not very big fans of the Oscars.
No.
As it's our right. We love movies.
No, yeah, I think the Oscars are bullshit.
To an unreasonable degree.
And by the way, last thing I'll say before the interview is, everyone's bitching about Seth MacFarlane, and I don't watch the Oscars. But let me tell you something right now. Whether the guy's funny or not, one, the producers know who they're hiring.
Right.
Way ahead of time.
Absolutely.
You never blame the host. You always blame the producers if the content is inappropriate or whatever.
He was vetted.
He's not the boss.
Yes.
So that's one thing to remember. The second thing to remember is the Oscars have a four-hour block. They don't run over. Everyone's like, oh, they always run long. No. ABC sells advertising for 4 hours. You ask any comedian on the planet to put together 4 hours of material, good fucking luck. It's a death job. It's a suicide mission. Everyone's like, Billy Crystal's great. You know why? He's not offensive, and he's on TV just enough time where you don't even remember that much of Billy.
Right.
Billy doesn't do anything amazing at the Oscars that people are like, oh, I will remember that for years.
No, he smirks.
He's just harmless, smirks, and goes transition segment to segment.
Right.
When Seth MacFarlane supposedly bombs or whatever, dude, the bro's got to fill 4 hours of fucking time. And for a guy who's never, I think, done stand-up comedy in his life, I didn't watch the show, but good for fucking him, lay off. Yeah, he's a misogynist. Oh my God, jokes about women. By the way. Yeah, you're listening to the wrong show for that. I shouldn't be giving that speech. But okay, here's Corey Stoll from House of Cards. We're going to come back.
We'll
talk more.
We'll come back. We will get off the soapbox.
I'm kind of liking the soapbox today, though.
I live on the soapbox.
Yeah, we haven't soapboxed
in a while.
I'm
so real, man. Yeah.
For anyone that's listening for the first time because of House of Cards and Corey Stoll, we don't usually soapbox. This is like the first time in a while.
Yeah.
But this hair thing bothered me yesterday, and the date bothered me, and I wanted Lee's opinion, and, and you know, by the way, men, you got to be feeling us, because Lee with the back hair at the beach, me with the balding, everyone's 10, 15 pounds overweight, and anyone that's not, and by the way, this will get me in trouble, but anyone that is too fit and in too good a shape usually has a peanut for a brain.
Yeah.
So, and no life outside of working out.
Or the personality of a lightning bolt.
And I'm not saying that as a guy who doesn't have a six-pack. I know these people. Some of them are my friends.
You got a
I consider
Carlo
them
Rossi
friends.
Jug of wine in place of a six-pack.
Right.
Okay.
And some of them are even my friends, but like, the truth is, they're not the smartest human beings.
No.
But okay, we're going to let you go here with Corey Stoll. Corey Stoll, House of Cards. Lee and I are going to come back afterwards, and we'll talk about, well, we'll continue our little Oscar rant, maybe.
Maybe.
Since everyone loves that so much.
Oh, boy.
Here's Corey Stoll, House of Cards. I'm doing great, man. This is Matthew Aaron with Corey Stoll. You may have seen him on House of Cards, Law & Order Los Angeles, Midnight in Paris. You were in the new Bourne movie this year, I believe, or it was last year, was it?
Last summer.
Yeah, it was last summer, right? Yeah, man, what a big year for you, brother.
Yeah, that keeps me busy.
I mean, here's my first question for you, because I love when I can get really excited for interviews. I mean, I love doing all my interviews because we pick our guests ourselves, but in your case, you're really a guy I've liked for a while because I loved you on Law & Order, and I know that show went through a turbulent period, and you really hung in there, and you did a great job. And I loved you in Midnight in Paris, and I'm watching House of Cards, and I watched all 13 episodes literally in like 4 days because I had the time to do it, and bro, you killed it. You killed it.
Thank
it
you.
Was great.
Thank you.
Peter Rusch?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's amazing how addicted people get to that show.
Yeah, it's incredibly addictive. And let me ask you this, because you're not on Twitter or Facebook, are you, Corey?
No.
Okay, so how do you know about what's going on with that show, since it's a very online type of show? It's a show where people have to stream it. How do you know what the reaction is to that show? Do you get feedback about it, or what keeps you in the loop?
You know, I really can't worry about that stuff. You know, I did my job, and you know, the people that I know in my life, who I respect, and if they let me know that they think I did a good job, then that's all I can worry about. Because if I start worrying, if I start taking praise from people I don't know, I have to accept their criticism too.
And right. No, that's a great point. But are you hearing about how big of a hit it is from everyone else? People are you haven't gone out of the house and no one said
no. People are loving it, and that feels great. I can't deny that. But on the sort of that sort of crazy blogosphere level, if you start Googling yourself and Twittering yourself, it's a black hole,
You don't want
to go down that rabbit hole. Yeah.
No.
But please keep doing it, everybody.
Right. No, I think you're right. We've been putting this pilot together that I'm doing with Joe Carnahan, and Joe's name will come up in the blogosphere. My name will come up in the blogosphere, and I read it one time, Corey. Never again. You're right. You can't pay attention to all that.
Yeah, of course. It's also, I don't know what you're like, but I'm a pessimist, and you can read 30 great things about yourself and one bad thing, and that's all you can focus on.
It's the truth.
Somebody out there hates you, and somebody will always hate you. So
it's the truth, and you always try to please everybody. I think as an actor or as an entertainer, where you're like, oh, one person didn't like this. How can I tweak it so even they'll like it, and everyone else that liked it before will still like it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on a certain level, that's really, that's detrimental to your job as an actor,
yep.
Especially with this character. You know, if I spent my time worrying about if people are going to like me as Peter Russo, I wouldn't be able to play Peter Russo. You know,
no.
Peter Russo, you get ugly. I needed to get as ugly as I needed to be.
How was it a writer's choice? Was it just the choice of everybody on the set, on that team of House of Cards, all the producers? But whose choice was it? Where Peter Russo does start out as and then you really start feeling for Peter Russo as the show goes on. Is that in your acting as much as it's in the writing? How does that work?
You know, it's a collaboration, and that was the thing that was really great about this process was, Bo Willimon, who is the creator and the head writer, he's my age, it's his first time doing TV, and so he he let himself be vulnerable. He let himself take in what I was doing, and it really did feel like a collaboration in a great way, which can be difficult in TV because often there's just so many cooks in the kitchen, and people tend to sort of claim their turf and hold on to it tight. But he was confident enough in his work to allow himself to take in what was being given. So I can't, you know, I can't say whose job or whose contribution.
Okay, so you are basically given the material you're given. We talk about this a lot on this show, where it's a collaboration. How much do actors help pitch? I'm assuming with this show, Bo and Kevin and everybody involved had a vision, and Bo just wrote out the vision. I know he had some co-writers on some episodes, but you guys wrote out the vision, and you just performed it. And so what is the collaboration you can put in when you get together with guys? Like, you have a lot of scenes with Kevin Spacey, for instance.
Yeah.
What is the collaboration you put forth as an actor?
Well, you know, the rhythm of the day's work would be, you know, you'd show up, you rehearse the scene before they figure out where the camera's going to go. And, you know, this line doesn't work. You know, there's the more nuts and bolts things. Like, this line doesn't work because I need more time to get across the room, you know, to be able to complete this action or whatever. And then there's also the more sort of character-based stuff, where I know that by the end of this episode, I need to be in this particular emotional state in order to motivate this action that I do later. So this doesn't make any sense. And then everybody talks about it, and you either agree or you don't. And, you know, in the end, the writers and directors, and they have the final word. But it was a very open process, and so those conversations just happen openly, but most of the time, you know, the writing was clear and the motivations were correct. And so you just sort of play it. And then there were also the sort of longer term discussions, right? So, you know, I'd go to Bo, this scene that's coming up in two episodes, this is great, but it means, you know, it makes it more difficult for me to motivate this other thing that I know has to happen a couple episodes after that. And he was really open to that.
Let me ask you this. For a bunch of episodes, until you sort of get into rah-rah mode and you're running for Congress, you are kind of your character. It's Kristen Connolly's character, and it's Kevin Spacey, and that's pretty much everyone you spend time with. You have like a scene or two with Robin Wright.
Yeah.
Kate Mara, for instance, did phenomenal work on this show. She,
yes,
her and you deserve Emmy nominations. Flat out, period, end of story. So how do you know that Kate Mara is killing it on the days that you're not on set? Because do people just know that you guys are doing this well, or is it something you guys all find out together when this is already produced, it's put on Netflix, people are watching it, and everyone's like, wow, Corey Stoll, wow, Kate Mara?
I mean, you know, I didn't have any scenes with Kate, unfortunately.
Right.
But, you know, we're all down there in Baltimore, and it's, you know, on a certain level, sort of like, you know, you're at camp, and you know, hey, let's all meet up for dinner afterwards. And how did today's scene go? Oh, that was great. What about that scene that we did? You know, that crazy scene that we, you know, that we all read before. You know, how'd that go? Oh, it went terribly. So nobody's objective about it at all. And
right.
So you hear about these scenes, and you know, all you hear is, oh, it was terrible because, you know, it was really cold, or, you know, the airplanes kept on going over and we had to redo the scene. So there's no clear image of how anything is going, really, until you see the whole thing put together.
What is it about entertainers that we always have to just nitpick everything we do and it's got to be bad? Like, it's never good enough. Like, it's never good enough. Like, I was at least hoping you were going to say we'd be at dinner and Kevin Spacey would walk in and be like, I killed it today. You don't even hear that. You don't hear it. What is it about that? Is us as entertainers, we just like to put ourselves down?
Well, because there's so much room for improvement. I mean, you know, it's impossible to be perfect. And so, I mean, that being said, I'm really proud of this show. I mean,
you should.
You know, I had a great time doing it. It felt great doing it. Although there were a lot of very painful scenes to shoot, it still was such an incredible opportunity to play a character with such polarity. You know, he had this tension between the capable, charismatic mask that he presented to the world and this incredibly weak, insecure, desperate child that was inside him. So, I mean, and almost every scene I got to shoot was exciting and great. I mean, TV show, often you say, well, I got five sort of boring scenes and maybe two juicy scenes in an episode. And pretty much my character, everything was juicy.
Yeah, you get the rock star. Yeah.
So, you know, so I'm really proud with the way it turned out. So, and you know, if that comes from all of us being hard on ourselves, then it's worth being hard on ourselves.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's being hard on yourselves. And for me, it's also some lowered expectations. In case it sucks, I could be like, I knew it was no good. let me ask you this, Corey. You play a TJ on Law & Order. And, you know, Fred Molina is someone I talk to often. And I love Fred.
Yeah.
You got to work with someone great like Fred.
And the best person to work with.
Amazing. He's hilarious. Isn't he funny? He's really funny.
It's hilarious. I mean, like, he walks onto a set and everybody just, like, if they're at a, you know, a level 8 of tension, he brings it down to a 5. It's just a great presence.
Yeah, he's great. He's such a good actor. That's a show that unfortunately found its footing, I think, halfway through the first season, and NBC didn't really give it a second chance. But it was kind of good news for you, because you then get House of Cards. Then you get to work with Woody Allen on Midnight in Paris. And that's another guy, like, you know, like in a different way than Fred Molina, because Woody Allen is just like this legendary, like, fixture that you don't know what to expect. You don't know really what stories to believe. And working with Woody, I'm assuming, was fantastic, too.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, you know, when you compare, you know, him to David Fincher, who did this,
yeah,
on a certain level, they seem like opposite. You know, Woody is known for doing very few takes. You know, he doesn't talk any more than he has to on set. You know, and in terms of his camera work, that's not what he's interested in. It was beautifully shot, but he just sort of sets up a shot and, you know, lets the actors do their thing. Whereas, you know, Fincher is really meticulous and takes a million takes. But they're similar in that they have a vision and they know the story that they're trying to tell. And that, as an actor, you know, even if both those directors can make you not uncomfortable, but it can, you know, push you in ways that is not your natural, you know, comfortable way of working, you know you're in good hands, and
right,
that is always going to make for a bolder performance and a more nuanced one.
Are they, as directors, do they communicate a clear vision, or because they're such creative people? Because sometimes I feel like, as an entertainer, I feel like I cannot always, like in the editing room last night for this pilot we did, I cannot always communicate as well as I would like my vision for things. Do these guys have a clear vision, or do you have to, like, collaborate with them on even the vision, or at least try to communicate with them to get it out, because they're directors and they're kind of all over the map?
No, I mean, these two guys in particular are, they know exactly what they want. And, you know, I mean, I think that's from years and years of experience. You know, if you're not articulate on a film set, I think you're really working a lot harder than you have to be. Those guys.
Yeah, they just.
You feel pressure because you know you're working with these legendary directors, and you know, as actors, you're pleasers, and you want to make them happy, and so that's. The advantage of working with these people, know what they want, but on a certain level, it's also the stress of which they like. I know he has his vision, and I'm just trying to not mess it up.
No, that's a great answer. Let me ask you about Fincher, because you brought Fincher and the tons of takes he does. I know on the film Zodiac there was all these rumblings, and you never know if they're true or false, where people were getting like, okay, enough, David, with the takes, and like they would get stressed out. Now you got a guy like Kevin Spacey, who's a theater guy at heart, and you got a guy like yourself. You've done theater too, correct?
Yeah, that came up with theater. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you guys are both theater guys, and here's a guy who's going to literally do 35 takes. Do you go a little nuts, or how do you keep it fresh all the time?
Well, I think being from theater helps with that. You know, I mean, I'm used to, you know, doing something, you know, hundreds of times.
Right.
I love rehearsal. I don't subscribe at all to the belief of trying to keep something fresh. You know, I don't think that you have a finite amount of talent or ability. I think the more you use it, the more you have. And I think, you know, I think it's really a disservice to yourself as an actor to try to, you know, dole it out preciously. I think that's a really it's not a dangerous way to be, but you're going to limit yourself by thinking that only your first reaction to something is the right.
That's right. No, that's sage advice for actors. I think that happens a lot too. So like, how many takes would you do? Because this is TV and movies, and is it similar? Is it different? So how many takes is an average take for a David Fincher show?
Well, you know, so he was working, you know, more than twice as fast as he ever has.
Wow.
You know, he started in videos and commercials where,
right?
You know, you do a quarter of a page a day, and then in films he does like a page a day, and we were doing 5-6 pages a day. So he had to work faster. But, you know, he is somebody who has embraced digital filmmaking, and he doesn't like a lot of times when people, I think it's changing now, but a lot of times when people first started switching over to digital, they just pretended like it was film, but it just happened to be digital. But, and so they'd have this sort of same rhythm where you slate and then, you know, rolling and all that stuff. And he really takes advantage of the digital format, and then he just keeps the camera rolling, and, you know, it'll only be maybe 3 actual takes, but you will have done the scene 15 times.
Yeah, I believe
you know?
It.
Or you'll just be in the middle of the scene, and he'll be like, okay, just take it back to that line, quickly say these 3 lines, say it again, okay, now make this adjustment, say it again. And so he manages to focus the cast and crew in a way that he, in the same amount of time, can get almost twice as many takes as another director.
Yeah.
It's really kind of extraordinary.
No, that's interesting.
It's exhausting because you never get a break. There's no time to go get a coffee. You just keep doing it over and over again.
That sometimes keeps you better as an actor, too. I remember someone in theater once told me we were doing a play, and they told me never eat before you go on stage. And I'd been doing plays for years, and I would eat something light and whatever. And I just thought it was crazy. But I think for some actors, where they're exhausted and they're working out, or when everything's such a rush, I think sometimes they like that for their performance.
They can get out of their own way.
Yeah, right. That, I think that's exactly what it is. So what I was going to get at was with TJ, Ernest Hemingway, Peter Russo. Okay, how many of these guys contain some of your qualities? What qualities does these guys contain? What parts of you have you put yourself into some of these roles? Like when you do an Ernest Hemingway, I mean, how do you throw in Corey Stoll?
I don't know. I mean, that one is definitely sort of a fantasy, or you know, maybe it's me, you know, and my drunkest and my most, you know, chest pumping that I could be. I'm definitely a confident man. I'm a strong man, but I am nowhere near as confident or strong as he is, or he believes he is. I mean, that was really the only way that I could play that part, was to just say, you know, I've got a couple weeks here in Paris with Woody Allen. This is a once in a lifetime experience. And so just do it. Just will yourself to be the most confident person in the world.
Right.
I think if there's any Corey Stoll in that Hemingway, it's the Corey Stoll who can will himself to be that confident for, you know, 3 minutes at a time.
Well, that's good. That's good. Because, but then obviously you took, and I'm sure this was just by a happenstance that happened, but then you get Peter Russo, who's the least confident. He's the most insecure child on the planet, at least for the beginning of the series. So that was a stark contrast from Midnight in Paris.
Yeah, he's probably closer to me. Definitely.
Yeah, Peter. Yeah. Well, I think Peter's a lot closer to a lot of the average men. We were talking yesterday. My roommate and I, we were talking about how what happened to all the great loser roles, like the loser who loses the big battles but wins that crucial small battle in the end, and you cheer for them. And what happened to those roles? They don't exist anymore, it seems. And I don't want to spoil the show for those who haven't watched House of Cards on Netflix yet. But I mean, even in this one, you're not cheering at the end, it seems.
Well, I mean, those are the best roles.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I hear you're doing a role kind of like that right now, Glass Chin.
Yeah, exactly. He's this down and out boxer. He was champ, and then got hit hard and quit and thought that he was gonna, you know, be a restaurateur and that didn't work out, and you know, now he's muscle for the mob, and he's. You know, he still has that chance inside him, but the rest of the world doesn't see it.
And I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be great for you. And this is your big lead, right? This is starring Corey Stoll.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a little indie film. It's got an incredible cast, and it's beautifully shot. But aren't some of the best stories
nowadays coming out of indie film? I mean, some of the best stories, at least the most creative ones. And you could say it's just indie film, but my fans that listen to the show, we know that's where the good movies are.
Right on, right on.
the interesting movies. Are you doing any theater anytime soon? Have you thought about it?
You know, I really want to. It's been like 2 years since I've done any theater, and I really miss it. So I'm looking for something good.
I know how much space he loves theater. Did you guys talk about your theater experiences at all?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he runs the theater out in England, at least for the next couple of years. And he's always been a hero of mine. And he has incredible stories.
Yeah, he's amazing in this. He's amazing in this show as well, Kevin Spacey. Robin Wright, Robin Wright is someone who I always thought was a good actress. And I always thought she had these like really juicy roles. And I was just always like, all right, she was really good in that. But I've never been like, wow, Robin Wright. Like I went to all my friends and said, Robin Wright's amazing. House of Cards. Robin Wright was so great. Like I'm just calling up people. I'm like, Corey Stoll, Robin Wright, Kate Mara, Kevin Spacey. I mean, this whole cast feels like they're the best. This is the best cast put together since Sopranos. And you guys easily killed this. I mean, I'm just so proud of you guys as a viewer. I feel for you guys. And I just think it's great. I really do.
Thank you. It was so great. The only time where we'd all be together as a cast was the table read. And we'd read two episodes at a time. And they were, you know, sometimes you're in the middle of shooting and the last thing you want to do is, you know, give another couple hours of your time to do this. You're exhausted, but it was always so incredible. The cast, and then even the guest stars that they bring in, were just amazing. And that was the time when you could really feel like, you know, you're on something special.
Yeah, I know you've been doing the interview rounds, but have the interviewers been spoiling the show?
Not really. I mean, there's a couple, some print stuff where, it's being presented as a spoiler
alert
place, you know.
Right.
And so then you can talk about the whole thing. But I actually don't think it's that hard to talk about without the spoilers because
while
it's not like a TV show in terms of the way it's doled out week by week. It's like a book, I think. I think that's the best way to think about it. It's like you can talk about where these characters start and the world that we inhabit, but you don't have to give away the plot.
I agree. That's great. Let me ask you, this is something the fans of the show and people who know me are going to find very interesting. Okay. You are a young man who you lost your hair early. And you and I were sitting across from each other right now. I hear you're a New York guy, but if we were in LA right now, you'd be feeling me right now, bro. So listen, to a guy who confidently wears that look and women think is sexy and you really rock the style. For men that are balding out there, what is your advice to give them confidence? How did you deal with it?
I don't know. I just shaved my head. I mean, it's who I was. And luckily things have changed since even, 10, 15 years ago. And you're not considered a skinhead or a biker anymore.
Right.
I think it's better to I think confidence is sexier than good looks for a lot of women. And so combing it over maybe doesn't really get that impression.
The old Gene Hackman.
But I can't tell anybody what else to do because I am the last person in the world to, give advice on grooming.
I hear you there, but what happened to the Gene Hackman comb over, man? What happened?
Well,
remember,
Gene Hackman rocked it. I mean, if there was ever a good rebuttal to shaving your head and seeing happen. Maybe if he was, if he was my age, if he was my age now, he would have shaved his head.
Yeah.
But he's my hero.
He's the best. He is. I don't know why he's your hero, because he should just be a hero to slightly underattractive balding men everywhere. You're an attractive balding man. Bruce Willis should be your hero or something. I don't know, but I think that's so. I think it's so interesting. I think what you said, and to even tie it into you talking about Ernest Hemingway and how you have that confidence for 3 men. I think if you just accept yourself for who you are and you wear that well, I think that's all that matters.
Exactly.
That's what I really think. And I mean, I'm not trying to be after school special on you here, but yeah. let me ask you.
No, exactly.
You got a movie coming out Nonstop with Liam Neeson. Did you have any scenes with Liam?
Yeah. He's great. He's another awesome guy who's so comfortable in his own skin that he makes everybody around him comfortable. He's a great guy.
So, and then my final thing for you is, I am sure everyone's been asking you this, but I know you're pretty sought after for pilot season. Are you looking at maybe doing another show, or do you think you're going to pass this year?
It's all about the material. I think, when you're looking at TV shows, and especially network TV shows, it's an enormous commitment. It's a huge leap of faith that you're going to, give a lot of your time, possibly over a number of years, to a particular character in a particular world. And I think there's a lot of great shows, a lot of the best stuff out there is on TV. And so it's really about the material. I think sometimes the threshold is a little higher for TV. Like, it's really got to be good. It's really got to be a character that I want to live in for maybe years. But I want to be picky with that stuff.
Well, congratulations that you're even in that position where you can be picky with that stuff, brother. I'm very proud of you. I think you're great. Whenever you're in L.A., come by and do the show, because you're great.
Awesome.
Bro, you were the best. House of Cards is on Netflix now. Corey, man, what else do you – is there anything else with release dates coming soon?
I think the only thing that has an actual release date is that Nonstop, which is in October. The other, a couple other indie movies, which are still, looking for distribution. So I don't know when that's going to come out.
That's great, brother. I'm so proud of you. You're the best.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Corey. And I hope we can talk soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, brother.
Take care.
All right. Corey Stoll there. That's a lot of brother.
You say brother more times than Hulk Hogan, I have to say.
That was the first thing. Tobias used to say that. And then when the whole audience of our show got to know Carnahan more and more, they're like, who says brother more? And then the show, the best show ever we ever did, which you were back here for, but you did call into that show. But it was me, Joe, and Frank Grillo.
Oh.
And that was a brother fest. That was a lot of brother going on. Yeah, I'm just, I don't know why. It's just like, I train myself not to do like and
right,
like most people do. So I replace it with brother.
Yeah.
That's my comma, brother.
You ever meet somebody who uses the word fucking?
Yes,
like
fucking.
In place of
fucking, yeah.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah. And I've noticed this actually. There's some celebrities that are like that. They replace it with fucking.
Really?
Like, and the adjective makes no sense. And
yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think it is an adjective at that point. Like, you never know. Mm-hmm. While you guys were listening.
Corey Stoll there. House of
cards and Netflix.
While you guys were listening, and you know what? I have got to. We were going to do this whole thing, talk to Chuck Hagel, but Mikey Turzo's on the phone, and we need to have a little chat. Because while you were listening to Corey Stoll, and we're going to wrap up the show early today, but there's an interesting story going on,
right.
And I need to put Mikey Turzo on a little mission
we're
here.
We're definitely going to not wrap up quick, though. But
yeah, when I said quick, I meant less than an hour. Mikey, you there?
Yeah.
Hey, Mikey.
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
I need to do me a favor, pal. I can hear you fine. Do you mind hitting up Lucy and figuring out what the fuck's going on?
What is she? Why is she trying to find you?
Lucy Lawless, his publicist, contacted Pat today, and she said that Lucy could do the show tonight. Then she contacted Pat 10 minutes later and said Lucy couldn't do the show. Then Pat got an email during the show saying Lucy's on her way to Taste Chicago and is on her way to do the show. Now, we're not at Taste Chicago. We're in the apartment because the interview was taped, and I like doing shows from the apartment when we have taped interviews because
right.
It's just easier.
Well, I can
and,
do it in my pajamas
you're right,
with a
right,
cocktail.
Right. So, Mikey, would you apologize to Lucy for whatever we didn't do as usual? And
here, how about this? How about I send you her number and we call her live on the show right now?
Mary, you should talk to her first. I would call her live, Mikey, and now my audience is going to think we have no balls.
No, but
you know
we're
in enough trouble with her people.
We're in enough trouble in general with lots of people, I feel like. And I don't think we want to
You talk for a second, Lee. I have to go grab something.
Okay. Well, I feel like we just got to play our cards the right way. That's all I think.
By the way, do you have any idea where I'm at right now?
No, where are you at?
I am standing in the middle of the weight room at the gym.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt the reps, the sets of reps you were doing.
Well, you know, I'm working on the pump over here, you know.
Yeah.
I got to feel the burn.
You got the burn going?
Anyway.
You just lifting or did you do some cardio?
No, I haven't got the cardio yet. That's coming. And I'm sure all our listeners are.
He was just saying, did you? Are you there? Mikey? I think he got cut off.
Mikey?
It sounded like he got cut off. He said that
he did get cut off.
He said that he was standing in the middle of the weight room. I asked him if he was rocking a half hour of in-your-face cardio beforehand, and he said
oh,
no.
Oh, we get bad signal at that gym. I know what gym he's at. Him and I get no signal.
Okay.
None.
Well,
so very brave of Mikey to even call from that gym.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mikey. I hope Mikey just calls up Lucy and clears up another situation that I had nothing to do with.
Yeah, well, listen. So it's a mix-up scheduling. Okay, you say to a certain point these things happen. But then, like, it gets backpedaled and double backpedaled.
I know. This is getting out of hand.
It's front-pedaled.
And by the way, what's even funnier is you and I are just picturing Lucy driving around Burbank
looking for us
right now.
Literally, like, Charles Bronson, head out the window, where are those fuckers?
Hopefully Montana's not at Taste Chicago. By the way, 603 North Hollywood Way, best deep dish in town at the Taste Chicago. Get a beef. But anyways.
I don't understand.
Yeah, right.
Why are Matthew and his friend not here? What could they be doing?
Where are those fucking guys, Joe?
Yeah.
Where are they? We should work together. Where are they?
Lucy, who we love, and also
love her.
We're a little afraid.
I'm very afraid of her.
Yeah.
She scares me. Like, but not in like a she's a scary kind of way.
No, in a hot way.
Yeah, she's hot.
Yeah.
But like it's scary.
Right.
Yeah. And plus, Lucy looks like that Xena shit, that ain't no acting. It looks like she can kick your ass.
I know.
Like it looks like
she'll put you over her knee and break you in two.
Lucy in real life make Xena look like a pussy. Like Xena looks like a total fucking wuss
right. Compared
to Lucy.
God.
Lucy, yeah, Lucy should be doing Death Wish, the remake. Carnahan should have never left. He should have just casted Lucy.
He should have casted her with a woman. It'd be a dramatic change.
Yeah, right. And I would believe Lucy in that role.
I would see that movie.
She's scary.
Would you?
I'd see it in 5 seconds.
I'd see it in a heartbeat.
5 seconds. That sounds great. Sounds way better than the Brave one with Jodie Foster. Yes,
yeah.
Sounds way better. Okay, so I don't know what's going on with this situation. Mikey is on the horn with Lucy
so
right
now.
Just so our listeners don't think we're pussies. I love Lucy. I would call her live. But if you've been listening to the show, I want everyone to understand. If you were listening to the show the last few weeks, you would know Lucy's people were mad at me for an episode because I told a story about Lucy that was perceived in a bad way or a negative light, and I'm just trying to play cool here.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be as cool as an Eskimo in an igloo.
Your lack of respect for right. women. You're like Seth MacFarlane.
I know. Misogynist assholes. Dude, it's like there's a new Lucy Gate. Lucy Gate's what we call it.
Call
and there's a new Lucy situation like every week.
Yeah.
It's never going to end.
I'm hiding under my bed if she comes by our apartment.
I'm afraid that Tobias or her publicist gave her our address.
Yeah.
And our neighbors, who already I don't think like us,
no.
are going to see Xena Warrior Princess kicking down our door.
Kicking down our gate and coming up here. And our door has no chance. It's been kicked in once before.
Probably by Lucy.
I don't want to think she's like 8 feet tall.
What a situation. Terzo says put him on, so he must be calling back in. I just so our listeners know, I never look at who's calling in the show, so if you try calling in, I apologize, but if you contact the show on Twitter or Facebook, I'll know you're calling in a lot easier.
You're welcome to call the show, but we don't take calls.
Yeah, right. Mikey, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so what happened?
Well, first off, I just want to say that Lucy is an absolute sweetheart.
Oh,
and I spoke with her, and she's totally cool. She actually did go to Taste of Chicago, so we might order a deep dish pizza.
Deep dish?
I don't know if she likes deep dish, but we should get one for her. She's from New Zealand. They don't have those kinds of things out there.
Hey, you know, that's true. They don't have pizza in New Zealand.
In any event.
Made out of sheep, though.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they have lamb pizza.
Yeah, right.
Delicious.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Go on.
So, yeah, no, I talked to her. She's cool. She said she had a big producer's meeting, and that's why she was on and off with the publicist. And at the last second, I got canceled, so she wanted to do the show, and she thought it was okay in Chicago, so she drove up there. She said it's no big deal. You know, she loves us. She's happy. She's great, a real sweetheart. And she actually wants to know if you can contact her publicist because she's interested in doing the show next week.
Next week when I'm in Chicago.
Well, next available show.
Oh, next available show.
So she's just going to be in town?
Yes. Who knows what Lucy's doing with her travel schedule? Mikey, do you have her travel schedule?
Her itinerary?
I haven't forwarded me the PDF file in her itinerary yet.
All right. First of all, I think we can consider this one resolved.
Yeah, again, by the way,
Mikey Terzo
saves the day again.
Hollywood handler.
Deep throat Terzo in Lucy Gate here.
Yeah. Lucy Whisperer.
Yeah, right, the Lucy Whisperer.
No, Lucy, it's not me. Lucy's just a very good girl. She's great.
She is. She's very sweet.
She loves you. She loves you, pal.
Oh, boy.
So she knew who it was exactly. She didn't even ask me. She knew who it was. She called me, hey, Mike, what's going on? I said, hey, Maddie called me. You know, you said you were driving around. We just found out. I wanted to touch base with her, so we're fine. She's cool.
You know what? I love that. You call her, and her phone rings, and it's you on the other line, and she'll pick up. She'll always pick up.
Well, yeah,
hey,
she's like,
Mikey.
Oh, it's Mikey.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Mikey.
That's great.
Yeah, she's a pal. She's cool. You know, anyway, so but, yeah, no, actually, by the way, your guest on today from House of Cards, outstanding.
Oh,
like
Corey
that.
Stoll. He's great. And it's nice. See, Mikey, you and I are always worried about our hair. And it's nice to know there's some men out there that can rock the bald. Now, I will say this, though, Mikey. The hair replacement thing, I talked to some people yesterday. It works. It's not that expensive. It's only like a couple grand. You're going to have a headache for 2 weeks, but, I mean, it replaces your full head of hair, and it works.
Well, you know, I got to tell you something. The Propecia and the Nioxin has been working wonders for me lately, so I think I'm going to roll with that for a while. But it's actually good to know that that's an option down the road, although every time I see Lenny, he gives me hope, so I don't know.
You know, I kind of feel like Lenny's hair has been stagnant for a while. It's just kind of like it's done. For now.
Well, when you take 7 Propecia every day, you know.
It's taking a break.
Yeah, it's taking a break. It's exhausted.
What are they in Congress with the $12 billion for the sequestration?
Yeah,
it's sequestration.
Well, you know, I do have to tell you though. I do have to tell you. And Mr. Cannata's defense, he does pull it off pretty well.
He pulls it off great. He does the Gene Hackman very well. Lenny does.
Yeah.
Lenny the great Gene Hackman. I mean, no, seriously though, Lenny rocks it. And Lenny being laid more if he didn't call every woman abroad who reminds him of a word that rhymes with bunt.
Yes. He's big with the see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, right. And listen, Lenny's problem with getting laid has nothing to do with Lenny's baldness or Lenny being overweight. It has all to do with Lenny telling women off left and right.
Yeah, I mean, the whole asshole thing, I get it, but at the same time, like, I mean, you can't scare him away before, you know.
It's not 1961, guys. Come on. I mean, I get it, but our fans are eating this up.
Right. You know, Mikey's never really an asshole towards women when we go out.
No, he's a gentleman.
Lenny's really bad. I can be bad. Carmi's awful. But Mikey's pretty good with women because Mikey actually wants to get laid.
Yeah.
I think Lenny, Army, and I are just like, we're just going to go home and jerk off. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Well, you know what the ironic thing of that is that it seems like in some instances with women, it doesn't work out a whole real well, does it?
No, it may not work out, but at least the women don't hate you.
No, they just want me to be their gay best friend.
Yeah, no, they just don't go back to Richards ever again.
You know, I'm really, really good at getting phone numbers. The only problem is all they want to do is go out with me to pick up Drake.
You know, I'm supposed to come into town Thursday, and I don't know if that's happening.
Why?
I may have to keep editing this pilot. I may not be able to come in town for another week or two.
Well, yeah, okay.
this is just Pat sent me all the emails from today that involved the Lucy Gate, and it's just it's definitely not on our end. That's for sure.
Okay.
So thank you, Mike.
No. And even Lucy said that she had that meeting. It was on and it was off, and that's why we got the emails. And she was just trying to make it to us because she felt like she felt bad that she committed to the show and then she canceled. And then when that got canceled, that was her first priority, was to try to get over and do the show. So
classy broad.
Classy.
I love her. I love her.
Yeah.
She's insane, but I love her.
Yeah.
She's going to kill me one day.
She's great, though.
But it's going to be out of love.
You're going to, yeah.
It's going to be one of those love kills.
Did you ever see the movie In the Realm of the Senses?
No.
No, okay. It's going to be like the end of that movie.
I thought you were going to say it's going to be like Last Exit to Brooklyn.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope not.
Oh. Well, at the rate I'm going with women in my life, I feel like I'm going to be Lord of the Flies, except for instead of flies, it's going to be a bunch of crazy broads.
I always feel like it's Lord of the Flies with Mikey whenever we go to the deli, because we always ask for like free slices of everything. We got to taste everything.
We're like, we do, don't we?
How about we get a taste of that? Yeah, we are going to do a Caputo's run when I get back, aren't we?
You know, and Lee, you'll love this. The best part is after like the first or second time. Anytime we're like, what's up with this one over here? The guy's like, here, let me cut it for you. You can taste it.
Right.
Oh, how nice.
Well, Lee, you kind of worked at a deli. You worked at a butcher shop. Do people come in and they ask for slices and taste it?
Well, they can't do it with raw meat, but some guys.
But you just had raw meat.
No,
there?
We had meat, but we also had cheese. We put out cheese samples. Some people
abuse
that. Some people took all the suckers out of the sucker basket. And some guys, like Eastern European guys, would taste the bacon. And you can eat the bacon raw. It's already cured.
Right.
But they would taste it. They would just snack on it. Well, okay.
Hey, Lee, do you remember that guy that used to come in and, like, eat the entire cheese plate, not buy anything, and walk out?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me. Anyway, so...
So, Mikey, we're doing a Caputo's run when I do get back, right?
Yeah. We should go to the real one, too.
Yeah.
What do you mean, the real one?
The original.
E.T.
Which one?
Elmwood Park.
Yeah, in Elmwood, that's the one we go to,
Elmwood,
pal.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I don't listen. I don't consider the other Caputos. I don't go to them. I went to the one in Naperville once, and I'll never go again.
No,
it is the one in Naperville is nice though.
No, it's really nice, but it's too crowded. It's too big. It's hard to get around.
The one by Armand's Pizza is the original one?
Yeah, the one by Armand's.
Yeah.
It's the original one, but they moved it. Oh. It's a new building it's in since like 2 years ago, but it's the original one.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's
I got to tell
Chicago.
Hey, what we'll actually do is we'll do a run down Harlem. We won't just say Caputo's. We'll do like a little shop of Caputo's, Pasta Fresh, Notioli, up and get this. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I loved Rex's Deli. That was a great recommendation on your part, pal.
Yeah, no. That's just Pina Pinello. She's the lady that runs it over there, and
she does
a real good job.
She loves me, and I took Ma, and Ma loved it. And Ma hates driving that far. And that's Ma's old neighborhood, though. But she loved it.
Oh, that's good. Your Ma fits in right in over there.
Yeah, she loved Rex's, and she loved that the old woman was hitting on me the whole time.
did you notice that you order $10 worth of food and you get $20 while you're waiting for your $10 worth of food?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They leave out, like, these bread rolls with, like, meat in them and stuff, and they leave them out as, like, snacks for while you're waiting.
Yeah, that's the schiacciata. It's like an Italian sandwich.
Schiacciata's, right. That's what it is. That's right. Schiacciata's, that's right. And, oh, yeah, Rex's is good. Yeah, I miss Harlem Avenue. I miss Harlem.
I miss it.
I do.
Yeah.
Harlem's the best.
I miss those little...
There's no Harlem Avenue in L.A., I will give you that. There is
no.
It does not
exist. In L.A., just 80-degree weekend coming out here while you're getting...
Yeah,
I'm not going to say I'm pushing back my flight because I want to avoid the bad weather, but it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt because Mikey knows how big of a pain in the ass it is to get me to go out of the house anyways. So.
Wow, yeah.
Caesar
says
Harlem isn't what it used to be. What Caesar doesn't realize is he just doesn't know the good spots.
What was the last time Caesar was even on Harlem? The last two spots Caesar went to was Mr. Beef on North Harlem and Johnny's Beef on Harlem and North Avenue. He hasn't been in anywhere in between ever.
Well, that's what I'm suspecting, too.
What do you mean isn't what it used to be like in the 50s?
Yeah, right. Like when Caesar was around in the 50s.
When it was,
exactly.
Vito's neighborhood.
Yeah,
I want to let you know something, Maddie, just because I know we got a little health kick going on right now. Since I have been back from L.A., I have lost no weight. I actually weigh the exact same as I did before I left, but my body fat's down almost 8%.
Oh, that's good.
Good.
Yeah.
Your body fat's down 8%. It's not 8%.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was
8%.
I'm like,
And I'm like, that's good, Mikey. And I was just about to look at Lee and be like, horseshit.
If my body fat was 8%, I'd have a six pack. Okay.
I know you. I know what I know what 8% is, pal. Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee may have been 4%. Asians are always half of whatever white people are, except in brain. They're double.
Well,
penis is half. Body fat percentage half. Though, I don't know. I've been seeing some fat-ass Asians lately, man. L.A.'s
hold on a second. Let me throw this out here. You know how we always talk about everybody in L.A. is skinnier and smaller, right?
Okay, yeah.
That is true with every single person out there except for Asians. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I know.
I don't know why.
Neil Fernandez is the only Asian that sticks to the stereotype of Asians.
Right.
He's tall and thin, but all the rest of them are fat fucks.
And he needs to pick a lane.
Like even Ang Lee, not thin.
Yeah.
Not thin. That university
that was
Illinois grad, best director Ang Lee.
That was great with the In-N-Out burger, by the way.
Oh, did you see that picture I posted of Ang Lee?
Yeah.
I'm broke back for Ang.
Yeah.
I love him. I love him.
Good for him.
You know what? If anyone's going to win those stupid awards, a guy from Illinois, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Ang Lee, good for him. And he loves the In-N-Out burger. That's dope.
Yeah.
By the way, that's a really dope picture.
That is a good picture. And I love the idea of going to that place after you won an Academy Award.
Me too. And I just love how he's gripping the Academy Award like
He's gripping
my cold dead hand.
He's gripping the burger,
and the burger
as tightly.
Right, and the burger
as if they were of equal of importance.
So I need to talk to Caesar when I call him tonight or something and find out what he means by this Harlem Avenue is not what it used to be comment.
I don't know.
I just don't imagine Caesar goes anywhere on Harlem Avenue.
Producer Caesar is on a vacation right now. He's not in the apartment with us.
Right.
Those people listening.
Oh, he
so
is.
So what you mean is that.
He is talking about back in the 60s.
I'm sitting in his princely executive swivel chair, though, so.
Wait, so what you mean is that not he's not on vacation, you two are on vacation.
Oh, Mikey, you're so droll.
You're so Oh, he's talking about in Franklin Park. Well, who the fuck goes to Franklin Park? That's too far northwest for me.
That's not even really
go to Franklin Park is to go drive up to the Red Apple.
Yeah, right.
Or to get a whoopie cheesy from Super Dog.
A whoopsky dog.
A whoopsky.
Which is grilled onions.
What's the cheesy whoopsky? The burger. What's the burger called, Super Dog, Mikey?
It's a whoopie. 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 Whoopie cheesy.
And it's a whoopee cheesy. Right, okay. Right. Okay. Pat Tobias says if I use the word dope again, 1996 called. You know what? Tarantino, I guess, said at the Academy Awards the other night. I didn't watch it, but I heard he said peace out. He can say peace out, I can carry on the tradition of dope. Yeah. Dude, I knew people in AA who said gnarly, what's the Boston word that they used to use?
Not
Boston.
But yeah, like you hear all the Boston people say it. Like it was slang. Real popular Boston slang lingo. Not bogus, but you're on the right track.
Not tubular.
You're right on the track though. Tubular, bogus, bodacious, I heard that. I heard gnarly a lot. LA doesn't care they don't know what decade it is in LA, by the way. For a place that's the tide for what the culture is in America, we have no idea what decade it is.
No.
We just sell the shit. We don't use it.
We don't know. We don't eat our own product.
No, we don't eat our that's the best way to put it. LA does not eat its own product.
No.
Oh, Wicked.
No.
Caesar got it. Wicked.
Okay.
Wicked. Caesar's right. It's Wicked.
Oh,
I heard that all the time in AA. They'd be like, it's so wicked.
Oh, it's wicked
it
stupid.
It was wicked stupid. Yeah, it was wicked stupid.
No, they add another word to wicked,
right.
Which is even worse.
Wicked smart.
Oh, you're wicked annoying.
You're wicked annoying. Yeah. Right. Wicked smart.
Yeah.
Wicked stupid. Yeah, I think I hate wicked, too.
Yeah.
That may be the worst word ever.
It's wicked queer.
Yeah, it's wicked queer, like the musical Wicked.
Yeah, right.
Well, all right, guys, I'm going to let you go and get back to my workout because I'm done being on the phone staying in the middle of the gym.
We're going to let everybody go. I'm glad you enjoyed the show. Mikey Turzo calling in.
What show are you going to, Wicked?
Yeah, Wicked. So solving the Lucy Gate for today.
Thank you. Today's Lucy Gate.
Corey Stoll from House of Cards joined us. And if you haven't watched House of Cards, it's must view. And Lee and I, of course, talked about many issues pertaining to male insecurity.
Yeah.
And it was a good show.
Yeah, it was a great show.
But it great was show.
It was kind of like taking a huge, like you just came home from a road trip that big.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. And tomorrow we'll be back with Wayne Fetterman, who his film festival opens with Sarah Silverman on the next
Crimes
week.
And Misdemeanors.
Crimes and Misdemeanors, yeah, right. And that's Sarah's pick. And we'll talk about the film festival tomorrow. I'll be back with Lee, and maybe we'll have some surprises for you tomorrow. But until then, Corey Stoll, House of Cards, check it out. Mikey Turzo, thank you. And call
peace
me
out,
there tonight, pal. Call me tonight.
Peace out, Mikey.
All right. I'll call you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, brother. And bye to our audience.
Yeah.
Bye, brothers
and
sisters.
Yeah.
See ya.